Redline.
Republican frontrunner Donald Trump has found himself in the midst of fresh scandals, both at home and thousands of miles away from the U.S. shores, in Britain. On the home front, he jokingly compared a barking dog in one of his campaign rallies to Hillary Clinton, following the suggestion from one of the audience members. As seems to be the reactionary pattern, Hillary supporters immediately decried Trump for what they said was more evidence of his apparent sexism, despite his fresh endorsement from Sarah Palin. In terms of his international scandal, the British Parliament has been debating whether or not to ban him from the country, following a grassroots petition that has already garnered over 500,000 signatures. While some politicians were adamant that Trump forever be barred from visiting their island nation, others such as Paul Flynn had a different perspective on things, warning that doing so would, quote, give him the role of martyrdom, which can seem to be an advantage among those who support him. Because of the scandals he's once more found himself in, be it the talk of barring him from Britain or his comparison of Hillary Clinton to a barking dog, Donald Trump is our man in the news this week.
Absolutely, Donald Trump is man in the news. Donald Trump is basking in publicity, but publicity goes hand in hand with scandal. It's an obvious thing. Well, when you say that he is just using that language describing Hillary Clinton is barking, but I think that his opponents can also say that Trump is barking at everyone.
I mean, I thought it was fun.
Yeah,
I didn't see anything ridiculous in it.
Just one quote of so to say, barking Trump. That's what he said on Ted Cruz, who is his fellow Republican. I'm quoting, he's a nasty guy. Nobody likes him. Nobody in Congress likes him. Nobody likes him everywhere once they get to know him. So isn't the language just to use against your fellow Republicans? But what is interesting that we got used to scandals which are normally associated with Trump. Yes, he's a front runner now. He's leading Republican race. But as I see it, it's a sort of a scandal. It's sort of like a bicycle. You have to press pedals. If you don't use that heated rhetoric, you're not trading jabs, then you fell down. So you have to move. The bicycle have to move. But what is also important that this week we have not seen all that rhetoric about the but also a scandal thousands of miles away from U.S. shores in Britain, which is the closest ally of the United States. And we've seen that heated debate in British Parliament. And some were just saying that they would offer even curry for Trump to eat to see that Muslims are not that monstrous. But my question is, if he's elected, how those people, this is a political elite of Britain, how they are going to handle that?
He has
to pay a visit
to
London.
Pop.
Yeah. And Cameron, you also used critical language, to say the least, about Donald Trump.
Could turn out to be embarrassing for them at the end of the day. But why
Absolutely.
Don't we discuss this with our inserted guest, Mr. Victor Mezin. He's Deputy Director of the Institute of Strategic Assessment here in Moscow.
Several years in the United States, teaching there and monitoring its political life for many, many years, I can say that we now observe that U.S. society is divided, the house is divided, and so much polarized, so that one part is sliding more to consolidating its conservative ideology versus what they say the changes in social political outlook of American society, with more migrants coming, for that matter, from Mexico and Latin America. And, of course, Donald Trump is not just a maverick or a freak, if I dare say. He is the front figure of all those forces which are to upstand this new development. And, of course, I think, like Marine Le Pen probably in the coming elections, like many nationalist leaders in Europe, including United Kingdom, he's got no chance. But what he's doing, he's consolidating the political class, like in many other European countries like Austria, Germany, France, United Kingdom, because they see him as a threat. But at the same time, he is the expression of the feelings and the aspirations of many, many millions of American citizens, while the migrant problem now with Syrian refugees is becoming the major political issue. Because, I mean, the bulwark, the majority of Republicans in the Congress saying no way that they're entering our country. We don't want what's happening now in Germany, what's happening now in United Kingdom. We are to protect ourselves. And this runs against the will of millions of American Muslims and creates the magic contradiction.
Red Line.
You know, I think right now is a good time for us to switch over on the line to our guest that's awaiting for us. That's Dr. Ahmed Fawaz, honorary research fellow at the University of Aberdeen in the UK and lecturer in political science at Cairo University in Egypt. Hello, Dr. Fawaz. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm fine, thanks.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the program. So, you know, as our in-studio guest, Mr. Victor Mizin, was speaking about, he was likening Donald Trump to other types of nationalist leaders in Europe. And it got me to thinking, you know, right now with this petition that we're going to be addressing, you know, there's this push to ban Donald Trump from the UK. But why isn't there a similar push to ban Marine Le Pen or even Viktor Orban, for example? Why are they only focusing on Donald Trump?
We have here, you know, in the UK, a big Muslim community. The Muslims in the UK is something like 2.5 million. So actually, the main point here is, you know, those who are, you know, supporting the ban, saying that it's a matter of equality, actually, yes. They did it before, you know, to some other people, some other politicians, or, you know, let's say even, you know, not politicians, you know, just numerous figures. So it's a matter of equality there. This should be also applied to Donald Trump as well. So the petition actually went online and actually it managed to actually together, you know, the minimum should be actually 100,000 signatures to be, you know, raised and discussed in the parliament. Actually, this petition exceeded 500,000 actually in its lifetime. So it was really, you know, amazing that, you know, but actually we cannot say the majority are supporting this. Actually, it was controversial even in the parliament. So there are most of the opposition, actually, most of the proponents of this, ban came from the opposition parties. You know, some people from, you know, the NSP, National Scottish Party, or even, you know, the Labour Party. But those from the Conservatives, they are really a bit, you know, conservative. You know, they didn't say that they approve what Donald Trump, you know, said, but they say that, no, this is a matter of, you know, it's an internal, you know, domestic thing that the U.S. has to deal with, but it's, for us, no, it's not, you know, this debate, and we should take into account the investment that this, you know, this guy has in U.K.
Mr. Fawaz, but still, I have a question. What made Britain so angry? Well, we've seen that some remarks of Trump were seen insulting to Muslims in other countries, but it is only in Britain that we've seen that three-hour hearings in Parliament.
Okay, let me see that. It's a matter of, you know, that sometimes it's for domestic, you know, consumption, you know, these, you mm-hmm. know, statements that they said. What I mean is, here in Scotland, let's say, as you know, that from which the opposition, you know, came to this guy, we are actually here in Scotland, they have already received lots of immigrants, actually, from Syria and Glasgow and Aberdeen. At the moment is waiting for more, actually talking about more than 20 families, Syrian families, as refugees, you know, they will come the next few weeks. So they don't want to have, on one side, you know, just to calm down, you know, the fears of, you know, the public, that don't worry, you know, it's not like this, you know, we are, you know, welcoming the refugees, and they don't want to have, you know, something like what happened in Germany when, you know, they have, you know, this nationality, something sentimental, you can say that, you know, they will go, you know, asking for them to be, you know, expelled or whatever. So they wanted us, you know, to have to say that, no, we are welcome, a liberal country, we are welcoming everyone. So, but when it comes to, you know, hate speech, you know, this is a different matter. So I know that, you know, it's arbitrary, you know, why this guy, not others, but still, you know, I think that it's, you know, most of the debate was, you know, just for domestic consumption. As actually some of the, you know, the MPs asked for, you know, this guy not to come and to have a debate with him. Others said that, you know, look at, you know, actually he had, you know, lots of investment in Scotland and in UK. Look at the jobs that he managed to create and so on.
And finally, if Trump is elected, what will happen to British-American relations? One day he has to come to London in a capacity of U.S. president. Those people who are just criticizing him, so even Prime Minister Cameron used pretty strong language. So how are you going to handle this? This is your key ally.
Yeah, but actually the point is, you know, even for this, you know, this petition or this debate, actually, you know, this debate, you know, they didn't produce any binding decisions, as the authority actually to ban someone from the country rests with the Home Secretary. It's not, you know, the parliament. So I think this will not, you know, make any difference to the British-American, you know, relations. As you know, the British lawmakers actually, you know, they don't have, you know, the chance, you know, to affect, you know, this point, you know, specifically. So it's just, you know, something that, as I said, you know, yeah, they just wanted to say that we are here, you know, the British parliament. Yeah, we have, you know, have a say in the foreign policy, but, you know, actually, it's not going to, you know, to produce any, you know, binding decisions, actually, towards Donald Trump and to the U.S. relations.
Yeah, we're just going to have to see where it heads. And as you know, right now, we're just in the middle of the election season, so there might not even be a President Trump. But we'll have to see what happens, and I'm sure we'll have you in the line sometime again in the future. Dr. Fawaz, thank you very much for offering your commentary. But we've run all out of time, so thank you again for being on our program. Alrighty, guys. Well, right now, we're going to switch over to Mr. Paul Grenier. He's an SAS International Affairs scholar based in London to tell us more about what he thinks. Okay, so Paul, you know, Donald Trump is in the news again, but this time it's for two completely separate scandals, one in which he compares a barking dog to Hillary Clinton, and the other one where they're talking about banning him from the UK. So even though he's already embroiled in controversy, I mean, do you think there's going to be any effect with these new ones? I mean, or could they maybe even boost his image among his supporters? What's your take?
I don't think if the usual calculus of what becomes a scandal and takes down a candidacy applied to Donald Trump, he would have been taken down a long time ago. And the barking dog analogy is certainly not more outrageous than, for example, the thing he said a year ago about associating the Mexican immigrants in America with criminals and drug dealers as if that's their prime sort of quality there. And that normally would have taken down a different kind of candidate. The English thing was an interesting twist. I was kind of holding my breath when that happened. But then in the end, I listened to the English debate and they said, what right do we have to say that we won't accept in our country whoever the Americans pick as their next president? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to ask you a little bit more about that, because I know that there was some criticism from some of Trump supporters where they were kind of brushing this off and they saw it as very condescending that the British would even hold such a motion for debate. So what's your take on this? Was this something that they actually had to respond to with that petition, or do you think they were trying to make a statement? Some of those parliamentarians were trying to boost their own profile.
I think that the audience that Trump is appealing to in the United States is obviously not an audience that particularly cares about political correctness. And I think in Europe and in England, what's politically correct in the United States is taken up a notch to an even, you know, higher level of being sort of holy writ. And so there probably was some very fervent sort of alarm in those circles in England about the Trump candidacy. But the interesting thing for me actually was something that went counter to that sort of trend, which was when the former senator, you remember Bob Dole, the U.S. senator. I mean, he's as mainstream as you can get. I mean, he's very sort of establishment Republican figure. And he said that he would prefer a Trump candidacy to Ted Cruz. And I thought that was extremely important, because that kind of gives sort of a seal of approval that as much as Trump has been mocked by the mainstream media in the United States and by sort of the educated people, period, I guess, or sort of upper middle class educated people who tend not to like Trump. You know, Dole gives a sort of a comfort level, I think, to the whole political class that, well, if Dole thinks he can live with Trump, then maybe he's not such a shocking thing.
Yeah, and the last thing I wanted to ask you, Paul, is when you mentioned about political correctness, it got me to thinking that, you know, if there really is one label that defines Donald Trump's candidacy, it is politically incorrect. And we see that this has actually brought about a lot of appeal among many diverse segments of society. I mean, there's even talk that 20% of his supporters are so-called blue-collar Democrats. So I was just wondering if you can just conclude with some words about, the influence of political correctness. I mean, where is it going? How does it impact on Americans? And what role is Donald Trump playing in stirring up this conversation?
That gives me a good segue to the main thing that I actually wanted to say about Trump, because it's actually something that I didn't think up on my own, but I just came across an essay by the American author John Greer called Donald Trump and the Politics of Resentment, which just came out yesterday. It's the most brilliant analysis I've seen of the Trump phenomenon anywhere yet. I encourage you to take a look at it. The point that he makes is that he actually is a brilliant strategician, just the way actually Putin sort himself kind of intuited. And when he uses these politically incorrect statements and says these insulting things, and then gets mocked, or has this crazy hairdo, and people say, oh, he looks stupid, which is what educated sort of upper middle class people always do. That's his strategy. By being mocked, all the blue-collar workers that you just referred to, they're treating him just the way they've been treating us for the past 30 years. He's one of us, and his poll numbers just shoot up.
I see. That's very, very interesting. I think that kind of explains a lot. And I mean, I for one, am going to be interested in, you know, reading at least a review of that book. And I think our audience will be too. It's a very unique theory. And thank you.
My pleasure.
Okay. And right now, that concludes our third and last section of Redline. So we're thanking all of our guests for participating in the discussion about Donald Trump, beginning with our in-studio guest, Mr. Victor Mizin. He's deputy director at the Institute of Strategic Assessment here in Moscow, Mr. Paul Grenier, an SAS and international affairs scholar based in Washington, and Dr. Ahmed Fawaz, honorary research fellow at the University of Aberdeen in the UK and lecturer in political science at Cairo University in Egypt. So right now, we conclude this week's very exciting stream of episodes by Redline, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Krepko.
And Sergei Strokin.
Thank you for staying with us. Goodbye and take care.
Take care and goodbye.